Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
50-50 football Monday. Neil Atkinson, John Gibbons, Dave Downey from the Blue Room in the studio as well. And we're also going to be talking to Sunderland and Watford. Big talk at the bottom. And we're going to have a chat about Everton and Liverpool as well this week. But we'll start talking about Everton quietly. Possibly, bar Chelsea, obviously, who are the best team ever to play football. The informed team in the division, the Blues.
They are, yeah. It's it has gone quietly. It's gone unnoticed in a lot of circles simply because of what's going on above us at this moment in time. But we've gone really smartly about our business lately. This looks like a Ronald Koeman side all of a sudden since the misery of the Merseyside derby. We've only lost one league game, won 6 on the bounce at home. We look unstoppable at home. I think I've spoken to you many times over the years, Neil, about how home games are managed by certain sides, and how we used to speak about how David Moyes' sides used to have them bursts of intensity for large chunks of the game. With Ronald Koeman, it's a little bit more of a slow burner. There's a lot more considered build-up. Patience as well has been key. And obviously the former Lukaku has been incredible for a club that's sort of lying 7th in the league to have a striker that good. You can see why he's made the noises that he has lately.
How was the reception for Lukaku? Was there any difference?
That was great. There were even more cheers, which anyone outside of the club might find a little bit surprising. Mm. But given what he said and how he said it, it's a lot the fans have been saying themselves over the last few years in questioning the club's ambition and what they are really doing behind the scenes to make things better. It's disappointing and it comes from your top striker, your marquee player who you don't want to let go. But at the same time, the benefit in that is it means people have got to start pulling the finger out.
Yeah, it's funny how that can happen sometimes. I remember when Suarez was agitating to move and we went over to Melbourne to watch the game and there was sort of over 90,000 fans there all cheering him. And you know, it was a real Suarez loving and it was kind of ridiculous really because he was behaving like a petulant child on the pitch and sulking and kind of didn't want to be there. And, you know, the more he did that, the more kind of people cheered him. And I think that may be quite strange for people to view from the outside of Liverpool as well, but I think what we were saying is, look, we know you're great, we know that you can go and play anywhere, we just really like it if you could play here for a little bit longer. Well,
the thing is, I mean, I think he's obviously said it to suit his own agenda as well, and I think that's been lost in a little bit of the translation with many Evertonians, because either way, if he's manoeuvred himself in a position where he can get out of the club and not be viewed in a bad light, then he's played an absolute blinder, because if he does leave now, then it's all on the board. It's all on those people who should be offering him contracts that suit what he wants and signing players. It's all on Moshiri. It's all on Bill Kenwright. It's all on Robert Elston. That being said, I think the club are on a hiding to nothing in many ways, because if he stays, they'll be given no extra credit at all. Other than the fact that you think the reason he'd stay will be because we signed the players who are adequate enough to meet the ambitions that he's got. I'm not necessarily sure we can do that in one summer, in one window. But what it does do is highlight the failings of the first two transfer windows under Ronald Koeman. And I don't think he's been happy about that either.
On that, how that sort of, I mean, because this is now, looking at the way the league table stands, looking at the way in which these games have gone, it's very much, I think, you know, Everton are part of a top 7. They're not sort of part of a bottom 14. Mm. They're part of a top 7. But it's difficult to see without there being the sort of investment that you're talking about, how Everton sustain into a top 4. Even this season, when they're in really good form, you know, they've still got some difficult away games left between now and the end of the campaign, which are going to say a lot about that Everton side. We'll come on to that. But it means that Everton, and you'd worry in general for Everton in this regard, Dave, they're in a bit of a funny position, because there is you can make a really coherent argument around all the top six as to why they're part of a top six and always will be one way or another. And then of the bottom 14, you can make a really coherent argument, bottom 13, sorry, around how all of those bottom 13 clubs are broadly always going to be in a position where they're going to sell one of the best players to someone, one of the sides above them. That whilst there'll be a run here and there, we had a West Ham supporter on last week talking about this, there'll be a year here and there where it might be a little bit different. Everton, given the size of the supporter base, which is huge worldwide, given their standing in English football historically, which is a side that wins trophies, wins leagues, that given all of those factors, even though Everton haven't won anything since 95, given all of those factors, it means that Everton, it's quite easy for them, what I'm saying, is to almost be this island between these two sort of behemoths. On the one hand, the bottom 13, on the other hand, the top six. They can find themselves just dropped in a space.
Yeah, they can. And I think that's what happened and that's what they suffer from. Under David Moyes and then laterly Martinez, last two seasons of Martinez, they dropped to a mid-table side. I think they're trying to slowly this season have got themselves back on an even footing in terms of being the best of the rest and having that tag. The real gap that needs to be bridged is the one to the top six. Now, the way they go about doing that is going to be fascinating. The track record so far this season has been quite poor in terms of investing in players. We've yet to see the clout of what a true billionaire does in Premier League terms. They haven't done anything substantial in terms of what Manchester City have done, what Chelsea have done in the past. Balance sheet is pretty level, aside from Schneiderlin coming in January. That's a massive disappointment for many people. I can sort of understand it myself, given the other things that Farhad Moshiri's done with the club. New stadium being announced, well, pretty soon is one of them. But I think that's also, there's a little bit of an elephant in the room there as well, Neil, because I think that with the new stadium, there needs to be caution heeded by a lot of people, because you look at Arsenal's situation when they first bought the Emirates for up to 10 years, even up until now, you could probably say a lot of Arsenal fans were disgruntled with how the club didn't do so much business in terms of player recruitment because of the cost of the stadium. I don't think you can give with both hands, regardless of how big you are, certainly financially. Chelsea didn't have to worry about that. Manchester City didn't, because they were in the midst of getting a new stadium anyway. So I think that's where Evertonians need to sort of not rein it in a little bit, but be a little bit more realistic with the fact that we're not going to have the overhaul that Chelsea had or Manchester City. That being said, there certainly should have been a lot more.
What's got Everton then to where they are is the core of players who were already there, broadly speaking. I think Williams has had an okay season, but not been a huge difference maker from the outside. There's still the question mark over the two goalkeepers. We'll come on to Schneiderlin in a minute, but you know, it is based around the fact that there is a lad who's, you know, we're still in March, we haven't had Easter yet, and there's a lad who scored 21 league goals for Everton. Barkley's really improved as the season's wore on, and the young prospects have given everyone a boost and a lift. And so therefore it does become the idea of sort of Schneiderlin's done really well. So it, almost where Everton will be looking to do in the summer before we get on to the remaining games this season is find another couple of Schneiderlin's lads who are at top clubs who for one reason or another hasn't worked out. It isn't that they failed. It isn't that they're failures as footballers. It's just not worked out for them at that club at that time. So they need to maybe leave a Champions League club or a club that expects to be qualifying for the Champions League because they're that level footballer to come and become that level footballer at Everton where hopefully it goes well for them. Should that just be the entire basis of Everton's transfer strategy for you?
I think it should take up a large portion of it, yeah, because I think there's a lot to be said of fringe players at clubs who are good enough to be at that level but simply find themselves for whatever circumstances not involved, and Schneiderlin ticks that box in almost every way possible. He's a Champions League quality player, didn't fit in at United. For all the money in the world, you think that it would work out for him because he's that type of player. Obviously, Mourinho has his own sort of ideology of how his teams play. He doesn't fit that, but when you watch him play, he's a joy to watch at times. His vision, his passing accuracy, there's tiny little intricacies that separate a good player from being a top player, and I think he's got them. I think I'd go as far as saying it, him, Barkley, Lukaku, if he stays, that those three need to be built around that sort of little trio that we've got going on in there. I agree, Williams, not so much. I don't think he's had a particularly good season. I think Williams, if you compare back to the three managers that Everton have had, the three most recent managers, I think he's a signing that Moyes would make, and he's a signing that Martinez would probably make as well. I don't necessarily think that that is a signing that kicks you on to any certain level. I think he's a stopgap, given his age as well. Obviously, continuing on the defensive chat, I mean, Jagielka similarly, he was decent against Hull, to give him credit, and he was okay against West Brom the week before, but he's a man who's on his way out as well. There needs to be, I mean, a seismic shift in how we line up next season. I'm not talking two or three, I'm talking, you know, at least half a dozen that need to come in if Everton are going to try and bridge the gap next season, because as good as they have been lately, I always find myself as a Blue getting to stages in seasons where I think we're winning games that don't really matter. And it always felt like that under Moyes when you got to this stage of the season where top four hopes are virtually gone. There was no danger of anybody behind catching up. So you're in that comfort zone where it's quite easy to play and with some sort of freedom. I don't think that's ever been taken into account when people, when the pressure is really on in the early throws of a season where games matter a lot more and you can put yourself in a position where you can try and achieve top four and things like that and cup competitions. That sort of learning curve has never been taken into account. I don't think the fact that when Everton are in the comfort zone, they can do really, really good things and play really well. Look at the home record lately. We're winning games at a canter at Goodison. Those games are a little bit more difficult when, oh, Everton can go in second if they win this one. Everton can, you know, creep into third, or they're only a point off fourth. Now the fact that the playing catch up with the top six, they've all got games in hand around us, doesn't seem so difficult to win these games now. And I just wish that attitude was still there. It's not carefree, but do you understand what I'm getting at in terms of the pressure being off their shoulders to try and achieve that? I mean, it'd be a bonus if anything happens. That's the team we've been in 7th, 6th, 5th over the years. It'd be a bonus if something else happens. Can we go and win at Anfield? Can we go and win at Spurs, Old Trafford? That would really put us in the mix, and the answer's always been no to that question. I think under Koeman, you've got a chance of trying to get into that mix, but there's still a hell of a lot of work to be done, certainly recruitment-wise.
I think it's interesting you talk about attitude, because I listened to the Blue Room after the Tottenham game, and there was a lot of kind of... I was surprised by how disappointed you were, really, because I thought, well, Tottenham are a good side, and, you know, it's not the end of the world to go there and to lose by a goal in five. But I think what was interesting from listening to you was there's a feeling amongst Everton fans, from what I was gathering, is you go into this game with a little bit of an inferiority complex, and, you know, there's a big game going against Liverpool in a couple of weeks now and things like that. And is that your concern as well for this team? Is because from talking to you in the past, and also from listening again to this excellent Blue Room after the Tottenham game, you know, it's almost as if the culture's embedded, and it goes back to managers. And so that's a really difficult thing, isn't it, for Koeman to change, you know, because he's just one guy. He's going to change really the whole atmosphere and culture and mindset of a football club.
You took the words out of my mouth with embedded. That is the word that I would use to sort of summarise Everton's mentality, both as a fan base and actually the people who are running the club down to the players. You still look at that squad, and there's lads still there from the early throw-ins of Moyes. Well, you know, mid-throw-ins of David Moyes' tenure at the club. Coleman, Jagielka, Baines, all part of a mentality that hasn't been to be the very best. And, you know, I don't want to do them a disservice, because they've been fantastic players in their own right over the years for Everton, fantastic servants. But they haven't had... It's so hard to put your finger on what it is, because... You know, is it a nasty streak? There's times when I've looked at that squad, particularly under Martinez, and thought they haven't got enough bite in them. They're not willing to scrap. And you know, win a couple of snidey free kicks, win a couple of penalties, get someone sent off. They're not willing to do that. And then I look, well, is it a genuine quality thing? Well, yeah, it probably is a genuine quality thing. So, yeah, there's a massive mentality shift needed from top to bottom, John. And you know, I include myself in that, because... I put it 7 years since we won at Anfield. It's 7 years since we won a derby. It's 18 since we won at Anfield. I'd take a point right now. It's completely the wrong attitude to have going into this game with a form team in the Premier League. We should be going to Anfield. But for some reason, there's this thing that pulls you back. There's this mental block that you think, it never works out against these. So It won't this time. And I it is an inferiority complex. I completely agree.
Moving forward then, is the idea of these games you're saying about the inferiority complex, I think you've still got to go to Chelsea, still got to go to Arsenal, still got to go to Manchester United.
And Chelsea got to come to us.
Chelsea have got to come to you. Of course, they beat you heavily early this season. They're going to be the ones that do sort of, and they're almost like test matches. I think the idea of, I think it's going to be, with the way in which the league's set up now, you can say Everton are in the top four picture, they sort of half are, but they'd have to basically win every game, I think, between now and the end of the season. They're almost like test matches, and that was my thing against Spurs, and I think that's why you were all so low against Spurs. It wasn't just the result, 3-2 against a good side, as John says. It was like, as I say, when I say a test match, it was, you know, what people say about cricket. You just find out how good you are by measuring against, and the 3-2 really flattered Everton, certainly on the first half. They should, I mean, they could easily have gone in 3 down. And so is what you're looking for between now and the end of the season, then, you know, keep doing what you're doing at home. It's a great win against Hull, a Hull side that have been scrapping. Everton wore them down. It was a really good win against West Brom. Again, West Brom turned up. Everton just found a way. Is what you're looking for. Keep that up. And then maybe one or two performances in these away games. Not to say that you'll win all of them, but one or two in these games against good sides where you're able to say, no, that's the level that we're at. That's a marker for next season. That's our line to build on going into the next campaign.
I actually wouldn't mind it if we drop points against a couple of those sides at home that we'd probably be considered nailed on to win right now for getting a result at Old Trafford and getting a result at Anfield. And I'm not just saying that because it's an old Everton-Liverpool thing and, you know, bragging rights and all that nonsense. I'm saying it because it's a long, long time since Everton have gone somewhere and really done a number on somebody and deserve to win a game. It happened once under Martinez, and that was at Moyes' Manchester United. You look at Everton's record against the traditional top four. We haven't won against, and I'm just covering it all in a blanket here, for near 20 years. And that's simply not good enough, because the side's a hell of a lot worse than Everton, who've got results away at these places. Yeah. So I gladly sacrifice that, Neil. The thing, you're spot on about Spurs. I didn't mind getting beat at Spurs, which is a strange thing to say. I minded the manner of the results because it flattered us and probably papered over a few cracks in as much as any defeat could, because I'm sitting there looking at it thinking, we're miles away from these, absolute miles away. Yet we could have nicked the draw at the end. That's the way football goes, isn't it?
On that, to sort of bring us around briefly to have a chat about Manchester City, Liverpool, John, it finishes a 1-1 draw. There's an excellent piece by Ken Early today that I read earlier today, which was sort of putting the boot into Mourinho's United to a certain extent, whilst praising Liverpool and Manchester City, which obviously, you know, pleasing on a base level. But simultaneously, you know, United are a good side, and I think there's every chance they win the Europa League, and they are a good side. But one of the things that you took from the Man City Liverpool game was Liverpool, there's these complexity of issues around their results against the bottom 10. But they can mix it with absolutely anybody. And, you know, it's an unbelievable game of football. I think that yesterday in the cold light of day, Manchester City won, Liverpool won. It's an unbelievable game of football. And the quality that was on show and the pace that it's played at was, you know, I've seen some quick games this season, but that was possibly the fastest, possibly the most intense.
Yeah, it was exhausting to watch. You know, I mean, I can't imagine what it must have been like to play in. Just lightning fast. City looked devastating in parts, and I was thinking, well, we're doing really well just to kind of keep hold of them here a little bit. You know, we were kind of like just trying to grab them in any kind of way we can. But then I don't know how they think so quickly when the game's going that fast. You know, I mean, sometimes the kind of speed of thought is as impressive as the speed of play, because you think, you know, how's he finding the time to put his foot on and to find that pass when this guy's steaming into him and they're all kind of steaming into each other? It was a great advert for the Premier League and a good advert for the managers as well. And you can see how footballers enjoy playing for those managers. And that's another little dig at Mourinho, basically, a little bit, because, you know, I think he... One of the reasons why he has short careers at certain clubs he goes to is I think he ends up doing the players' heads in a bit. Whereas you can imagine, you know, those players coming out of that game and thinking, oh, you know, both teams will feel like they could have won, but they'll feel like, well, we gave a really good account of ourselves and we really went at them. We could be proud to play for this football team and have played in that game. And I think that's, Dave, what you're saying. You want more from Everton away at these games. You know, you'd almost rather come to Liverpool and draw 1-1, but, you know, it's really, you know, it's that sort of game that we saw yesterday. Yeah. And you can see Everton are trying to win from minute one to minute end, rather than the kind of, you know, sit back for 90 minutes and defend, you know, really well. Get what you can, but then you think, well, what have we actually learnt? You know, because eight times out of 10, you'll lose that game if you play in that way, but you're just hoping it's the one that you don't. And so I think both sides showed that in that game. And I think for Liverpool, because obviously Man City, if you know, their ambitions can't be question, really. But I think for Liverpool, it shows that, you know, that there is belief within the football club that they can beat anyone and that they can play well against anyone. And that's kind of where they belong to be. And that's really good for us going into next season.
It's the ebb and flow of the game is one of the things that strikes me, Dave. You know, I'm sure you watched it yesterday. The ebb and flow of that game is... It's marked, you know what I mean? John's right, first 20 minutes you were thinking Liverpool were just hanging on to the coattails, and then they found a way, and the conditions sort of helped Emre Can especially, had a whale of a time for 5 minutes in there, rolling around and putting his foot in, and but Penn City in, and it is that somehow you end up being able to impose some order on the match, and I thought that that's what Liverpool especially did well. They managed to get themselves into being the better side for the last half of the first half, getting themselves the goal ahead, then sort of sitting in. But there's so much quality, so much pace, so much ability on show. And then there's also the tactical flexibility of Manchester City. I think the move to De Bruyne wide and Sterling through the middle gave Liverpool a ton of problems. Aguero then dropped a bit deeper. You felt that was a tactical thing as well from someone. And it just meant that Liverpool were, again, back to sort of just trying to keep City at bay, and in the end they couldn't.
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting observation of how tactics work in games of football from elite-level managers. I think Klopp got it spot on. I wasn't convinced with Guardiola's... initial setup. I thought they were very static in midfield. Yaya Toure is simply not built to play in games of that intensity.
I felt sorry for him when he came off. You know, have you seen that? Have you seen him with the camera cuts to him? The camera cuts to him, and he honestly looks like he needs a big sleep.
Yeah, he was a forlorn figure throughout most of the game, and a passenger at best at times. And
second half of the first half until about the hour mark, I agree.
It's interesting that, you know, you're making the comparisons to the level that Everton have got to step up to. You look at the fitness, and Ronald Koeman put massive emphasis on this early in the season, that Everton were not fit enough. You look at that yesterday, that was ridiculous. There's twice when I've looked at Liverpool and thought that this season. One was away at Swansea, where I thought the level of fitness in the second half was just incredible. And this one, I think both sides at their absolute peak, knocking lumps out of each other. I was gutted to finish 1-1. I wanted it to be 4-4, given the chances that were missed. But the fact that they were missed adds to such a fantastic and enthralling game to watch. God knows what you lads were like at the Etihad watching it, when Lallana's missed, Sterling's missed, Aguero's missed. It's ridiculous, the level and the quality on show. Yet the basic things were the things that let both sides down.
What strikes me is, just to be sort of end this, is that we often, when Liverpool have spoken about this season, John, people say, man, often, I completely understand why. You've got to defend better. You've got to defend better. And I think Manchester City had the same thing thrown at them, and they had it thrown at them after they've gone out of the Champions League. But there's... I think that both sides can defend better. This isn't to say that that isn't the case. But when you're coming up against attacks that are so irresistible, and that's one of the things that I think happened to City against Monaco, was... the end of the position going, well, we've got the defenders that we've got, and we've got to play the game of football that's in front of us. So the best way in which we're going to deal with this is actually have the ball away from our goal and try to score goals, if you know what I mean. And it's strange, isn't it, watching these sides, because they're clearly being built off the basis of, we want to win games at the very highest level where we will come up against astonishingly good attacks. So therefore, we need to be able to attack astonishingly well ourselves. Do you know what I mean? That's the focus. The focus is find a way to attack astonishingly well, because you'll never be able to defend well enough to keep out, insert name here, whether it's a Man City player, a Liverpool player, Luis Suarez, Leo Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. So it's the idea that, well, we need to have our own ones of them, and we need to be able to play our own way in order to stop that and stop the supply and stop them getting the ball and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's where your focus lies as a team, and I think Liverpool proved yesterday that when they're aware they're going to have a lot of defending to do in a game, that they can defend well and that they can defend well individually and also as a unit. And I thought City looked a really good unit as well in terms of, you know, how the shape, but Liverpool can't think like that at home to West Brom or Burnley or whatever. They can't think, well, we'll get our shape right first like other teams do, and it makes me laugh sometimes, some of the defenders in this country who were praised, and I think, yeah, well, they're all right, but, you know, if you've got a bank of four and then the midfield in front of you aren't doing much, you know, movement either. You know, you can look a good defender, you can head things around all day. You know, you've got your fullback next year. You know, if you do make a mistake, then your mate's alongside there. And Liverpool haven't got that luxury, nor can we, because we need to be more expansive. And as you say, we need to have these ambitions that we have to play a certain way to be able to take teams apart. And so it's tough. It's tough being a defender for Liverpool. We ask a lot of them, but I think yesterday for both teams, it showed that, you know, when that concentration level's there, maybe you just need to concentrate more in all games. But when that mindset is slightly different to when that mindset is, okay, well, we need to make sure that we're all at it today, then they can do it.
But you can also still be undone. I mean, the thing that the Sterling chance right in front of goal where Milner, I think it's a penalty, Milner catches him. I mean, I think, I'm not going to say he knows what he's doing, but he's clever. But even that, the ball from De Bruyne to release Silva, when you watch it back, what a pass.
Yeah, and some of the play was absolutely exceptional, too, especially to get wide quickly. And you think, because Liverpool was set and then suddenly the film, you're like, well, how's that happened? You know,
I think City have got real problems. I mean, you look at where both teams are in the grand scheme of things. I think Liverpool in front of City, simply because I don't think City, there's too much for Guardiola to do in the space of one summer. I think they're really going to struggle to get players that fit the way he wants it to fit. Yeah. You look at Stones, probably far too early in his development to be a top player for Guardiola. Otamendi, not good enough. Sanya, I thought, was woeful when he come on. The amount of times he gave the ball away, he was really poor at right back.
Well, they're picking a midfielder ahead of him, to start the game, which shows how much faith he's got in him at the moment.
This thing with Kolarov as well. He seems to play Kolarov at centre half, and he's not a defender by any means. Clichy again coming towards the end. Torre, we've spoken about the fact he puts the game still up for grabs, and he puts Fernando on to nullify Liverpool's counter attacking threat. For Leroy Sané, says a hell of a lot about where Manchester City are right now. And I actually think Liverpool are a hell of a lot further down the line than Man City.
Okay, huge thanks to Dave. We shall get over now and we shall find out about Watford and Sunderland. Yep, joined now by Bradley Hayden from Watford FC blog. And Bradley, I noticed there was a lot of talk really at the weekend. It's the pressure is heaped on the Watford manager given the results.
Yeah, well, it's very worrying given the result, really, because before that you'd kind of think with games against Southampton and Crystal Palace, you'd expect us to be winning at least one of those, and we've lost both of them. So because of that, we're in the relegation dogfight really now, and I think a lot of Watford fans have been sceptical about Walter Mazzarri for a while now, and given Saturday's result, I think a lot of Watford fans are remain sceptical, and I'm not sure whether he's the right man to take us forward, really. I mean, as Watford fans, we don't really expect a lot. We expect to be mid-table sort of thing. We expect a bit of fight, a bit of passion, a bit of a game plan, and some decent football, and we're not getting that in the minute. In games, we don't really look like, the players don't really look like they know what they should be doing. I mean, defensively, we've been all over the place. Against Southampton, we were all over the place all game, really. And even when we take the lead, I mean, against West Ham and Southampton, we've taken the lead quite early on. And instead of seeking the incentive and going to get two or three goals, we've completely sat back and not really looked like we're going to attack, and just expecting Southampton and West Ham to come at us, which they did. And we've just got sat further and further back. And then eventually they've both equalised and gone on to go on top in both games, really. So a lot of Watford fans have become frustrated with how the team is performing, and we don't necessarily think Walter Mazzarri is the man to take us forward, because considering the squad we have, it's a better squad than last season, and arguably we maybe should be higher than we are. We should be pushing for a higher finish than we are, and we're now battling it against relegation, which none of us really wanted at the start of the season.
When you say to take you forward, do you mean to take you forward into next season? Because I think they're two different conversations now, whether it's to take you forward into next season or to take you forward into the next month. Just to sort of the listeners who won't be aware, as I'm sure you are, Bradley, your fixtures in April, you come back from the international break, and then you've got Sunderland at home, West Brom at home, then admittedly Tottenham away, but then the next home game after that, Swansea at home. So my point is, are you of the view you could do with getting a change made before those four games in order to give yourself the best possible chance to have a run at them? Or are you of the view, listen, we get to the end of the season, but then we have a big rethink. We look at what we're trying to do. We look at who's in charge, and then we go from there. Which of those two sorts of options are you erring towards?
Personally, at the minute, and I think other Watford fans are like it, I think maybe we should be thinking about making a change, because if you look at the impact that changes at Leicester and Swansea have had, they've had a lot of positive results since and have pushed themselves up the table a bit. I mean, you look at Leicester; they were in the relegation zone a few weeks ago, and now a couple more wins, and they're practically out of it. So, I think a lot of Watford fans think that really we think that a change should be made, because with those games coming up, if we lose them, then I don't think many have faith in Walter Mazzari that he can make a positive change in those games to make us get a positive result. So I think a lot of Watford fans would ideally maybe want a change in the international break, because it is a perfect time. It is 2 weeks. So if we did decide to replace the manager, then he's got 2 weeks to work with the squad and come up with a suitable game plan. And I think maybe a change would be a good thing. But realistically, given our owners, I think what the most likely thing is that we'll probably wait till the end of the season and then have a rethink then, like we did with Kike Sanchez-Flores last summer. But there is a lot of discontent among Watford fans towards Walter Mazzari at the minute, because as well as on the pitch, we've looked like we have no game plan. The players don't really look like they're sure of what they should be doing in games. A lot of Watford fans have become frustrated with Mazzari off the pitch. I mean, a lot of Watford fans feel they have no connection with him. That is partly because of the language barrier, but he hasn't helped himself either. He rarely comes over and appreciates the fans after the game. And if you look at pictures after the Crystal Palace game, 10 minutes after the match is finished, you've got pictures on Twitter and whatever of Mazzari outside the ground having a quick cigarette, which is not really what you want to see as a supporter after you've just lost the game. You think maybe the manager should be setting a better example than having a cigarette after the game is finished, which is not a good example to the players, and it's not a good thing to see as a supporter either. So there is a lot of discontent among Watford fans at the minute with Walter Mazzari, and a lot are worried going into the running, and we're kind of looking over our shoulders a bit, which is what we thought that we wouldn't be doing, considering the improvements we've made in January and last summer as well.
Yeah, it is a worrying time, because someone always gets dragged into it, and that's what people say, is that a team who are mid-table kind of gets dragged into the relegation fight, and the problem is that the teams you get dragged in it with, they're scrapping already. So you as you said, that the teams below you, you know, they're getting points from somewhere, and they've got that mindset of we're in a dogfight here. And if the players haven't got that mindset, it's quite a difficult thing to suddenly switch on to in April, say, if they need to do that, and that must be a bit of concern for you.
It is definitely. I think there are some players like Troy Deeney and Aurelio Gomez. And maybe Sebastian Prodon, Craig Cathcart, who know the club, and they have a good mindset, and they've grown the club and seen it develop, and were part of the squad that came up into the Premier League. So they've been fighting to get into the Premier League and play in the Premier League for a good few seasons with Cathcart, Gomez and Deeney. But some of the other players that have been brought in, you don't really know. They've come from bigger clubs and have not necessarily been involved with a relegation fight before. I mean, you look at Etienne Capoue is a brilliant player on his day. You look at start of the season, he was scoring lots of goals, but since then it's dried up, and he's kind of a luxury player. When he's playing well, he's brilliant. But when he's not playing, when he's not at his best, which is seemingly most weeks, he's not really effective in games, and that is a worry, because there's too many players in this squad at the minute who you say are maybe a bit too comfortable. They don't really have any pressure on for places, really. A lot of them are edging towards 28-30, and maybe they see Watford as their one of their big final paychecks. They don't really see it as a club that they just see it as another paycheck, really, not something that they may be thinking about staying with long term, because there are a few players who are around 30, 32, getting towards the latter stages of their career, who are maybe thinking about their next career step and not about Watford. And there are some players who their attitudes you could question. I mean, you look at Jose Holabas, he's had a lot of bookings this season, and he didn't really want to sign for Watford in the first case, to be honest with you. There are a few players who you maybe think when the game gets tough, are they going to roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty? And for the answer is no. You think that maybe we need a few more battlers in that squad who have been there and done that and are a bit more experienced in England. So it is a concern. I am worried. You think maybe that ideally we if we get a couple more wins we should be safe, but at the minute you don't really, with Watford on, we're not really sure where the next one is going to come from.
Indeed, one win does change everything. We'll speak to you again very, very soon, Bradley. Everyone should get onto the Watford FC blog, and that's what it is on Twitter. And now we're going to go over to Sunderland, where one win doesn't change everything, but good Lord, it wouldn't half cheer them up. We're going to speak to Steve Goldsmith right now. From Bradley, as I said, Watford just need a win, and a win would change a lot of things, but they are concerned, whereas Sunderland need more than one win to feel as though they're powering away and a little bit safer. Steve, it's the one win, Burnley at home, you feel like it should be the one that comes for you, but all reports suggested it wasn't a great game, wasn't a great performance. Sunderland, Burnley had the better of the first half, maybe Sunderland had the better of the second half, but it feels from the outside like it was a game you needed to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a game that both sides were scared to win. To be honest, the both teams were petrified to go on there, to just go and kick off. If one of the sides were a little bit braver, they would have won the game. It was there for the taking for both of them. There were actually quite a lot of chances, really, from both sides. I mean, I don't know what you saw of it, but how on earth Billy Jones has just missed that empty goal with that header. And things like this, you know, you do feel that a win would have just give us a little bit of a chance going to Watford next, who are very sort of inconsistent and unpredictable, aren't they? So you either go to Watford and you get turned over 3-0, or you go there and you beat them. Going into that game off the back of a win would have been good for us. A big disappointment, I think, from certainly the lads I know at the game, was his decision to drop Didier Ndong out of the side. I'm speechless. I'm genuinely speechless. Why on earth he would consider to do that? The midfield was slow, one-paced.
He said he wanted more Britishness in midfield, didn't he? Which is quite a strange thing to say.
It is a very strange thing to say. But Ndong, you know, if you want to generalise like that,
He's won his battles everywhere I've seen him.
Yeah. African midfielders are different to British midfielders, because it has, you know, if you're going to generalise, then you know he gets stuck in. He's very physical. He gets about the pitch, and you know he came on and changed the game. He changed the game straight away. Just the pace of it. Moyes always had this thing, didn't he, at Everton, where he liked to control possession, but it was just slow and ponderous. And just no urgency whatsoever, where you were just thinking, like, is this the best they have to offer? Then, I mean, relegation—the relegation sort of debate isn't even a debate anymore. I haven't spoke to one Sunderland fan who thinks we'll stay up. Not one.
Really? It's on the one hand, it's only 7 points, but on the other hand, you don't quite see where a run comes from. I think
the fixture list isn't too bad, you know, compared to other seasons, to be honest. But as I said, Burnley, who are great at home, but I think I was right in saying, I don't know about now, but before the game, they had the worst away record of any Premier League.
Yeah, it's only the third draw away from home in the league this season.
Yeah, so even like Derby, who finished on 11 points, and Sunderland, who finished on 15 and 19 before, had better away returns than that. So, and they were there for the taking, and you just thought, if this is the best we have, and clearly, you know, just to sum the whole situation up, look at the games where the points come from, and it was all the ones that Victor Nietzsche played in, who is, you know, as you guys know, by no means a world beater, but just the fact he was an outlet and an option. Without him, you know, I haven't sat and worked it out, but I would love to see how many points we have without him in the side, because I bet it's about 11.
Well, I mean, it's the winning that I think looks really, really difficult. It is that, you know, it's you don't quite see how the Sunderland side regularly finds a way between now and the end of the season to look like they're going to score two. in a game. And I think that marks out, if you look at the, you know, the whole bank of results in 2017, that's one of the things. You get the early draw against Liverpool where you do score two, but apart from that, every single time this side takes the pitch, it looks like it needs to score two, and it doesn't look like it's got the ability to score two.
No, yeah, I wouldn't disagree. Or say maybe that I've got the ability to score two, but the issue is if we go a goal down, then it's game over, more or less. I mean, one of our wins this season did actually come where we went a goal down at Bournemouth, but apart from that, again, I would love to sit down and have a look over the last sort of 5-6 seasons to see how many times Sunderland have come back from a goal down, and I bet it's really grim rate. Mm. And it's all coincided as well, isn't it, where they're just... It's almost like we're just waiting to be put out of the misery now. The fans are sitting there, 40,000 now again, man. It's ridiculous. I mean, you're just sitting there thinking, just give us something. Give us a tackle.
Yeah.
Give us a little bit of urgency. And that's all it takes. And there's just... They were scared to get the ball. They didn't want it. You know, Jordan Pickford had the ball. He was looking around. So, you know, give him something. And people didn't want it. Jermaine Defoe, probably the only person who wants it. Jan Ozai is capable of getting it. But what happened is people were just firing the ball into Jan Ozai from all angles. You know, shoulder height, head height. You know, give him it. And hope he does something with it. And I'm back to where I spoke to you guys a few months ago, when not long after Moyes first came in and before we got our first win. And I was saying, yeah, I'm struggling to see what the plan is. And we're back to that, unfortunately, because the more you think about it, you know, as simplistic and as basic as it sounds, Victor Anichebe was the plan. And when he's not on the side, there's no plan apart from fire it at Jan Ozai. Hope he does something with it. If the ball falls in the box of Defoe, he'll probably get you a goal. The midfielders, just as I said, reiterating again, just slow. Larson, Gibson, one-paced. I mean, you know, people... He's getting away with criticism, generally, Moyes, I think, from the Nationals and from people outside of Sunderland. But... And one of the things people say is, oh, you know, he didn't have time to bring in players and stuff like that. And yeah, the weekend, you had Djilabodji and Dundong, 20 million quid sitting on the bench. So there were more signings. Mm. And they're not on their team. They can't dislodge people like O'Shea.
Well, I mean, on the wider Moyes point there, I mean, one of the things that it's interesting that he's still there, that there still doesn't seem to be a ton of pressure on him, and there's a variety of reasons of that, and I can completely see your point around the media question and all of that sort of stuff. As we've had a chat about before, it feels as though for some people Moyes has done Sunderland a favour by going there, which is ridiculous. But on that sort of the wider Moyes question, there's a lot of talk of, will he be the man to bring us back up, or he'll be, you know, he's there at the club for the long haul. My thing about that is that becomes difficult, doesn't it, if you're a manager with a football supporter who's thinking to himself, well, I don't know if I want to watch this fella's football next season. That's the contrast with, for instance, what happened with Benitez at Newcastle. Is Newcastle supporters delighted to get him. He ends up being unable to keep them up in the end, but they're excited going into the following year's campaign. I think that Middlesbrough have got rid of Karanka now. It would have been hard, I think, as a Borough supporter to be psyched up about watching Karanka next season, whereas I suspect Hull's lads would be made up if Silva was still there, but he probably won't be. Do you see what I'm saying, Steve? It's actually quite difficult, isn't it?
Totally, totally. And the players look just so flat and disinterested. And a lot of the thing I'm clinging on to the next season when we go down is that, and I mentioned this to you guys again before, that some of these players I think will be okay at that level. I think the fact that Catamol's been injured for another season might even help us in keeping him, where that would have been unthinkable, really, because he's too good for the Championship, Lee Catamol. But if we kept him and Paddy McNair's fit, and Jack Rodwell stays fit, it's not a bad... And Didier Ndong, that's not a bad, you know, midfielder going to the Championship, but the want to have to play for the manager as well. The thing with Moyes, and I won't claim this analogy as my own because I did read it somewhere in one of our fanzines, where it said at the minute, Sunderland and Moyes, it's got that feel about it of parents who are staying together for the children, a married couple who are staying together just for the kids. Because he thinks, well, my career is done for. You know, if I walk away now, I'm sacked now. And Sunderland are thinking, eventually we're going to have to give somebody more than 8 months to try and put a long-term stamp on it. And that seems to be what everybody's accepted. So it does feel like we are stuck with each other at the moment, if I'm being honest.
And well, and that's not a good atmosphere for a football club, really. And that's you need to feel as though there's at least the attempt to move forward, and that's hard. But at the same time, at some point, there has got to be some stability. It's not an easy situation for the Sunderland board.
No, it's not an easy situation at all. But I just think with Moyes, you've got to remember sort of how highly he was thought of as a coach. He had a great reputation when he went to Everton, and then he did well enough at Everton to get to the Manchester United job. And I don't know, he just seems to me that he hasn't really kind of recovered from what went on at United, really. And, you know, he has this, you know, obviously the strange time in Spain where he starts really well, but then it doesn't, you know, end up go very well either. And so I don't know whether he just looks like to me like a man who needs a bit of a break from football and to realise kind of what he liked about it and what he got from managing and kind of what kind of manager he wants to be, because at the moment he just seems a bit kind of paralysed by fear to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I know he's got a cautious sort of reputation anyway, but it's just his lack of willingness to play attacking players is just remarkable. I mean, Wabin Khazri, we'd probably talk about him on the show every week because of his continued absence. And he said he implies that his ball retention isn't good enough, but there's something not quite right there. And people are saying, oh, he doesn't look like he's in shape and his motivation isn't there. But that's obviously something Moyes has done, because he was fine last season. Mm. And he was somebody who could just produce a bit of magic for you. And we've got no attacking spark whatsoever. He let Jimmy and Lentz go on loan to Galatasaray for the season. He's another one. I mean, it's a story of Sunderland's life where I saw he played against Man United and scored and got won the match in the UEFA Cup. The same happened with Emanuele Giaccarini when he played for us. He goes everywhere and he plays out of his skin, and he just doesn't manage to just don't like these players for us. It's bizarre. It's really bizarre. And without trying to sound too negative and overly pessimistic, maybe the manager's rubbed off on us all now. We've been in this situation before. We've got kind of fixture list this time before, so I would never say never, but I can't. Yeah, you know, I don't know even the most positive Sunderland fan who thinks that will stay up. People are preparing for next season in the Championship already.
Okay, thank you very much to Steve Goldsmith as ever, and to Bradley and Dave and John, all of us this week on 50-50 Football. Very much hope you've enjoyed yourself. We'll be back with more of this sort of thing later in the week, and the way in which this works is we need you to tell your friends about it. We hope that Steve will do the same. This has been 50-50 Football this week, although it may not be one for Sunderland supporters, if we're honest. It has been 50-50 Football this week. Thanks to everyone. Back soon.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.